Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I am a PGY1 psychiatry resident physician. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. This episode is part of my series on my fertility journey as well as my pregnancy journey. With these episodes, I'm taking recordings from back when I was dealing with infertility. But as I go back to listen to these recordings and edit them, I always have some thoughts that I want to put the recording into a little bit more context. So this recording is from May 2022. And I want to have a disclaimer that I do talk about details of my menstrual period as well as how I did on some medications. So very personal, and I talk a lot about my symptoms. So just so you know, I do talk about more of those medical aspects of dealing with infertility and the workup for that and the type of medications I was put on. And I do talk about how I was seeing a midwife at the time, and I did also go on to see midwives throughout my entire pregnancy. And I talk a little bit more about this in previous episodes in this series. So if you're just joining now, I really recommend listening to those other episodes first, especially since it kind of follows my story month by month. I also want to mention that I talk about the differences between hypo-hypo as well as PCOS. And at this point, I did not receive a diagnosis for my irregular periods and infertility. I was not yet diagnosed with infertility either because I wasn't trying for a year. However, I was undergoing the workup, and I just want to point out that my story is pretty typical, that I was eventually diagnosed with infertility and PCOS as the source of that infertility. However, it took me a long time to get there. Even with my background in medicine, at the time I was a third year medical student, and I was still kind of in denial that I had PCOS. But that's kind of fair because I didn't have a lot of the typical signs of PCOS that we talk about in medical school, because in medical school we really learn what a typical case looks like for all of the diagnoses we talk about. We don't have enough time to cover all the nuances of every single diagnosis. That's why we have doctors who go into different specialties. Like in a few years, I'll be able to discuss the nuances of psychiatric medications and psychiatric diagnoses, but I never really learned the nuances of obstetrics and gynecology. So I just want to normalize that most women with PCOS takes a really long time to get a diagnosis, because it is in a way a diagnosis of exclusion in that you do a lot of lab work to rule out other things first. And it's a syndrome, which means it's just a collection of criteria that you would meet. And it hasn't really been linked to an underlying pathological process. So that's what differentiates a syndrome from a disease. I kind of make it seem like in this episode that I'm expecting to become pregnant that month. And I just want to provide the context that that didn't happen. And I had to wait a long time after this as well. And the next recording that I have is not a month later. Up until this point, I was recording every month, and I have an episode basically for each month that I recorded. However, after this recording, there isn't really much for quite a few months, and it was because I was feeling discouraged. And I'm going to talk about this more because I do have another recording from several months later, and I reflect on the reason why I wasn't recording. But just to kind of bring this into the conversation, it's really discouraging to deal with infertility, especially when it takes so long to get answers. And because you have a lot of waiting periods in between your cycles, and there's a lot of false positives, and there's a lot that goes into it. And I didn't have to wait nearly as long as other women have to, but it was still very challenging for me, and I was feeling discouraged, and that's why I wasn't recording as often, because I thought that the recordings were going to be useless because I would never get pregnant and it wouldn't be worth making a series on if I was unsuccessful, because no one wants a sad ending. They want a happy ending. Luckily, I was able to have a happy ending, and I'm really looking forward to sharing what worked for me. But I want to acknowledge that not everyone has these happy endings, and I think that my story would have been just as helpful if I didn't have a happy ending, because there's a lot to be learned from that as well, and I think a lot of women would be able to connect with me on that. But I hope that this series is helpful to hear my experience and to get something out of it, whether you're going through this yourself or you just want to understand what it's like to experience something like this, or maybe you have a family member going through this. And I think God has a plan for everyone, and it doesn't always align with what we want, but I think it is still just as beautiful. So here's a recording from May 2022. Hello everyone, I am recording this on May 26th, 2022, and I'm just providing a little bit of an update on my journey to hopefully becoming pregnant. So, hasn't happened yet, but I wanted to just share about what's going on. So, I think I did discuss last recording that I was going to see a midwife, and she was going to kind of help me through investigating the reasons for my irregular periods. Just to recap, after being on birth control for almost 10 years, I got off the pill and then had the withdrawal bleed from getting off the pill. And then about 6 weeks later, I had a natural period. So that means things are at least working a little bit, but not as optimal as I may have hoped, as far as wanting to get off the pill and basically get pregnant pretty soon in order for it to fit the timeline that I think would be ideal with me being in school, and also with my husband's school and job prospects, that it really made sense that this was really good timing for us. Obviously, things happen and God has a different plan. Now I won't be pregnant during my board exams, and now I will only be in my first trimester for most of my sub-internships, which are the one-month-long auditions, basically, for residency. So going to your top programs and doing a rotation with them for a month, hoping that they will like you enough to interview you and want to rank you highly for the match. So now, let's say I get pregnant this cycle that's upcoming, I would be hitting around the third trimester, very late into the semester, like November, December-ish. And I would be set to deliver in late February, which is after rotations end for the whole year, and around match week, where most people are taking it easy and spending time with family, which would be a really great time because you have time off. And then residency doesn't start until June or July. And that gives me at least 3 months with the newborn, and also works out really good for my husband, who will be just finishing up school by that point, may not be able to start a job right away, and can take a little bit of a gap in employment if he needs to.
As we kind of sort through getting a house and getting everything together, it would be a lot of change all at once. But if you remember, I got married right before med school started, and literally moved to Virginia and started medical school a little over 2 weeks after getting married. So I am used to all this change at once, and so I feel comfortable doing that again, but obviously not everyone is like that. But again, surprised that people are listening to me talk about this, but I think everyone has their own journey, and if I can offer anything with advice or anything to let women know that they're not alone on certain things, then it is worth me doing this. If not, just for me to refer back to and hear how much I've went through preparing for my first baby. So a little bit more in particulars about what is going on right now with this journey. So I went to see a midwife a little over a month ago, I guess, and shared with her that I did have the one natural period after birth control, but I wasn't able to get another period yet, and I was several weeks late, and my pregnancy test was negative. So she was going to kind of wait it out a little bit to see if my period came, and she did a bunch of blood tests that came back all negative. Everything was fine, and I think I did talk about this on my last recording, so won't go into that. But yeah, I didn't have anything, no signs of any testosterone issues or anything like that, no prolactin issues, and no thyroid issues, which are the ones that they really look out for, because those are so easy to reverse when it comes to those being fertility or period problems. But I had all of that was negative. If anything, my estrogen was a little bit high, which is actually a good sign, because that means that my ovaries are working, which I was personally worried about. But from what I kind of saw with my own knowledge of medicine was that it did seem like there was a little bit of a sign of maybe, like, the only thing that is then remains is hypo, which is hypothalamic hypogonadism, and that just means that it is a higher level issue of my brain not working on schedule as far as telling the ovaries when to do their work, which is an easy fix too. That means that my ovaries aren't the problem. And you can have this with multiple issues. So, like, many girls get this when they first start their periods, that their hormone relay system is just not matured yet, and so they have problems with that's why so many girls have irregular periods, and they have problems with the timing of making sure everything lines up and their brain responding every 4 weeks with the new cycle. So I think that is what is going on, which is super common. It can also be caused by low BMI, which I'm not quite there, so I don't think that applies to me, because usually they look for a BMI under 19, and mine is 19 point something, so that's probably not it. And then too much exercise can cause it too, which I do exercise for about an hour a day, but it's not super high intensity, so I don't think that's it either. The other potential cause of it is stress, which I consider myself someone who deals with stress well and has good stress relief habits, but I mean, I'm in medical school. I'm in my third year going into my fourth year medical school. Of course I'm stressed. So I think that might be part of it too. But my midwife who I'm seeing doesn't really seem concerned that it is hypo, but she doesn't really know what it is either. And that would be my best guess. And the other thing I was worried about was PCOS, but I have heard that, this is something that we learned, that you can have PCOS, in quotes, after getting off of birth control, because your body has to adjust to making everything itself again, and it has to re-regulate its relay cycles and how hormones work in your body. So that was my other theory that is going on too, but it doesn't really explain why in the past I didn't have my period until later age. Maybe I did have hypo, like, very bad when I was younger, and they were just never able to really diagnose me with it, and they didn't really seem concerned about it, so they just put me on birth control so I would at least have my periods. So maybe I did have that more to an extent in the past, and then now I have this post-birth control PCOS going on. The midwife I'm seeing didn't, I asked her this outright too, which you should always do. If you hear something from this podcast or you read something or hear someone else talk about something and your doctor's not even talking about it, or if you're seeing a midwife or a PA or an MP, they're not really talking about it, make sure you ask the question. Like, you don't have to debate them. You don't have to prove that they're wrong or anything, but you can definitely ask them, well, what do you think about this? And they'll tell you. So my midwife didn't really seem to think that it was any sort of PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. But that's just something that I had a thought that there could be something there with that. But I do trust my midwife, even though they're considered advanced practice nurses. And, you know, I'm this close to being a doctor. I do still acknowledge that she has years and years of more experience than I do, and years of working with women like me. So I trust her judgment, even though technically I might have more schooling than her. I trust her experience. So that's why I always ask these questions, and I actually never told her that I was a med student because I want her to be able to explain everything to me. I don't want anything from her end to assume that I know anything. So I want her to explain everything to me as if I know nothing. So that's why it's always better to ask questions instead of using higher level medical vocabulary, because then they're going to start assuming that you know certain things and they might not share that with you. So I don't want to say I play dumb, but I definitely downplay how much I know, so that I can get that treatment and so I can get that clear communication. So what she decided to put me on was Provera, which is a progesterone that you take by mouth. So to back up a little bit, at this point, I was almost 2 months without a period and negative pregnancy test. And I had to also do a repeat pregnancy test right before I started Provera to make sure, again, that I was not pregnant. So I did that repeat, got a negative, started Provera. So this is a pill that your doctor may put you on. So you take it for 10 days and it basically induces the luteal phase, because the luteal phase is progesterone dominant. So I take that for 10 days and then I stop taking it. Obviously, I finish the course, and stopping taking it basically causes a withdrawal bleed. So it actually thins the endometrium throughout the 10 days, and then after taking the progesterone, without progesterone, you bleed. And it might take a few days for that to set in. So it's supposed to take between 3 and 7 days to cause a withdrawal bleed. I took the full 7 days for a withdrawal bleed. So did that. So I did have some side effects from this drug, and obviously side effects are going to be to vary between individuals. But so most of the days I had very minimal cramping, pelvic cramping. I think a few of the days, especially the first day I started it, I had a little bit of nausea, but it only lasted like a minute and then kind of went away. It was just like this nauseous feeling. So that's really like all of the side effects I really had from that. I think I did have nausea towards the end of it too, but otherwise I tolerated it pretty well. So I had my withdrawal bleed 7 days later, bled for like 3 or 4 days. And then I was like spotting for another day or two. So that brings me to where I am now. And so I am day 6 of my cycle now. So day 1 was the first day of my menstrual period. I woke up bleeding. Now I'm on day 6. So not bleeding anymore. So yesterday on day 5, I started clomiphene citrate, also known as Clomid. And this is a drug that you take orally as well. And this is supposed to induce the follicular phase of your period. So I had something to induce my luteal phase, and then now I have the follicular phase induced. And this is just to make sure that everything, so my brain responds and my ovaries respond to this drug. And then I'm going to have to take LH test strips to make sure that everything is working properly. So LH is what really confirms that ovulation is taking place. So I'm going to have to begin those to make sure that I'm ovulating. So all of this is supposed to work together to cause ovulation. So how Clomid works is that it works at the brain level. It is a selective estrogen receptor modulator. So how it works is it actually blocks the estrogen receptors in your hypothalamus. So why would blocking this help then? So the reason why is because your hypothalamus in your brain, if estrogen binds to the receptors on that, it's basically estrogen telling the brain that, hey, we have enough estrogen. So therefore, the brain does not send hormones that lead to downstream effects to increase estrogen. So essentially, clomiphene citrate, or Clomid, tells your brain, because it blocks these receptors, estrogen isn't able to communicate with the brain. So the brain thinks that your body does not have estrogen. So it's like a negative feedback loop, right? So if you cut out the negative feedback loop, then your brain is going to release a ton of follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone, FSH and LH, and these hormones are the ones that trigger ovulation. So basically causes your brain to induce ovulation because your brain thinks that there's no estrogen. So this is a lot of times used for PCOS patients. It can also be used for hypo-hypo. So it can help with anything at the brain level when your ovaries are working fine. So that's why the midwife I see, and I agree with this, that this is a treatment that might be able to help me for whatever we're dealing with. Assuming that everything else is working, then this should work. But this also has the use in that my midwife wants to see if it does work. So if it doesn't work, then that means that we're dealing with a separate problem that's probably at the level of my ovaries. So that would be information that is good to know too. So we'll see what happens. But all is to say that things are going well so far. So Clomid actually, so I just took my second dose today. Clomid has a list of pretty scary side effects, especially one of like the on-label warnings was that it can cause blurry vision. So I was not allowed to drive until I see how Clomid reacts on me. But I really haven't had any side effects whatsoever. I didn't even have any, like, cramping yesterday or anything. So, I'm hopeful that my body is going to react well to this medication. So, I take this from day 5 of my cycle to day 9 of my cycle. And then on day 10, I'm supposed to start having sex and measuring for LH, which is just a dipstick for pee that I have to do every day to see if I'm about to ovulate. And then after getting a positive test, I definitely want to have sex that day and then the day after. And then ideally after I get a positive LH test, which means ovulation, then 8 days later, I'm going to get a blood test for progesterone to make sure that my body was making enough progesterone to last through the luteal phase. And to really confirm that there's been a corpus luteum. So right now I'm a little nervous and growing a little bit impatient, if I'm honest, because this whole process has really taken a while. I feel like I was like, for practically over a month, I was hoping like my period could come any day now. And yeah, so it was hard to finally decide to take the Provera and really have to wait another 7 days to even restart my cycle, but I'm glad I did that. And then taking this clomiphene takes time too, and I have to be so on top of taking pills every day again. And also, I'm always taking my prenatals at the same time, so it just is pretty time consuming to do all this, but I know that it's all worth it. Also, just want to say that I am bracing myself for the possibility of not having any LH surge, and which would mean that I did not ovulate even with clomiphene, which is supposed to induce ovulation. So I'm preparing myself for that reality, that maybe there is something else going on. I'm also supposed to have an ultrasound within the 14 days of my cycle. And this was very stressful because the midwife that I'm working with, she told me to call as soon as my period started after taking Provera so we can schedule the ultrasound for the first 14 days of the cycle. And I was very stressed because I called and they said that there was no openings, zero openings available at where I go. But they could send me to the family medicine residency in town, which I would feel very uncomfortable going to because they are all people that I've worked with before, either in the school setting, because I literally did my family medicine rotation there. So I literally know everyone there. And so she only had openings for that. And I had to, in a split second, be like, well, I guess that's my only choice. So I said, okay, what times do you have available for that? And she said, I have May 31st. And I wanted to die because May 31st is my 9-hour USMLE exam, which I cannot reschedule without paying $100. And if you are a med student or had to take any boards in your life, you will know that you have a day picked out months in advance of when you're taking a test, and you format your whole study schedule around when that date is. And changing that date is just a huge decision and usually leads to worse outcomes because it's not what you plan for and you psych yourself out. Even if you give yourself additional time to study, usually it's not a good use of your time because you were building yourself up for this test date. So that was out of the question for me. So, and the next day she gave me that was available was not within 14 days of my cycle. So I don't know how the math didn't work out there, but I literally had to say, that's not 14 days in my cycle. And not only that, but she was very rude to me. So I had to email my midwife and basically told her that we couldn't get an ultrasound started. So I'm still waiting back to hear if they can do something for me, promising me that there would be an appointment for me within 14 days for an ultrasound. And then not having anything available is extremely stressful. But I'm hoping something opens up because the ultrasound is supposed to make sure that I am developing a follicle. So looking at the level of the ovaries and seeing that the ovaries are responding to Clomid and starting my cycle. And then the LH would confirm the next part of it. So I'm also preparing myself for everything to work perfectly and then still not get pregnant. But that's just something that I've heard. Sometimes people have to go through multiple Clomid treatments. And it's still up in the air. Maybe everything's working and I don't have to be on Clomid every month, but I might just stay on it just so I can stay consistent, especially to fit into the time frame of having a baby before residency starts is going to be really important to me. But we'll see what God's plan is, because it's always something different than what I have planned, and it's always more beautiful than what I've had planned. So I am looking forward to that, and I'm just trusting in Him and relying on my husband for support. He's really the only one who knows about this besides my midwife at this point. And yeah, we'll see what happens, and I will talk soon.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe to First Line on your favorite podcast app to hear a new episode every Monday. Thanks for listening.